Succession number 20456, reel 15.
Brigadier Wilson, reel 15. You were saying that the battalion had not done any battalion training or something of that
sort?
Well,
sort of. Your problem in those days was the release groups. And so, therefore, from every week, your elder soldiers departed. And they were mostly your signalers and your drivers and your NCOs and so on. And with them departed their skill and knowledge. And you got to the stage where your signal platoon, okay, it could manage sets, and if everything went well, it was all right. But if anything went wrong, they had no idea as to, you know, how to adjust it. Same with the mortars.
Was this because new drafts were not experienced?
Well, they were straight out of the training centres. They were not fully trained guys. And Squire was a great soldier for what I would call peacetime occupations, like riding and shooting and so on, and he was a very brave guy in war. But he had no idea of logistics and how to train people. He'd never been to staff college or anything like that. And I said to him after about 2 weeks, I said, "Doctor, I think this is what we want to do." And he said, "Okay, get on with it, you know." So I did.
So he was content to let you
run
a training program. What did you actually put on the training program?
One had carders, you had officers' days, you had signal exercises, you had mortar exercises, you had company exercises with live ammunition, and one then sort of worked out what you might call, not order, an order of battle, but standing orders for various things. If you were ordered out for a particular search, you knew what to take in the way of barbed wire, pickets and things. If you were ordered to do a particular patrol, well, that was all different. You didn't want the same sort of things.
You're talking about doing company exercises with live firing.
Yes.
Where did you find the exercise grounds to do that sort of training?
Well, that was rather frightful. You just got hold of the Palestine police to clear an area for you. They'll tell the villagers, sort of, you know, we'll be shooting here from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. Buzz off, you know. And then you search the houses, make sure no one's there. I don't think we murdered anyone by mistake. But one had total control. I mean, if you can imagine Nazi Germany, you sent the police in and you said, if you want this area cleared.
What were you teaching them? Were you teaching them standard infantry tactics?
Totally. Well, no, infantry tactics as applied to the internal security in Palestine. Yeah.
You mentioned doing cordons and searches.
Yes.
How would you go about cordoning and searching an area? What would be the stages and the procedures?
Well, this required very careful briefing, particularly in the built-up area of Jerusalem with lots of little streets and so on. And the first, you did this usually, started about 3 in the morning, when it was very dark and everyone was at home. And you blocked off your various exits with maybe a section of infantry or cavalry or something. With usually a Palestine police and Willem, an interpreter. And then you went down the streets into houses and said, "Sorry, chums, out you get, down the road." And outside the actual cordon area, you had put up a series of squares with barbed wire in which you got people in according to sex, age, and all the rest of it. You had food for them and things. And as they entered, the police would sort of filter them for you. And there were obviously people who they were much more interested in than others. Most of the people were there, by the time you've covered the whole area and had a bloody good look to see if there's any nonsense around, were sent home. They were home by midday. It really wasn't a lot of their, how can I put it, gallant way of carrying on, but they'd had to be done.
Who actually did the searching in the buildings?
You had combined squads of police and soldiers.
And, I mean, did you train the police or did the police train you?
No, the police
were
totally
for
trained
searching.
Themselves. Hmm. The soldiers worked in some ways under their orders. Hmm. Yeah.
How many men would you have in a search team looking for
probably about
a house?
Three. Oh.
What sort of things were they looking for?
Well, in those days, one was looking for weapons, explosives, anything like that, or papers. Yeah.
Who actually decided which areas were going to be searched?
Oh, that came from division. You know, we were told from about where we were to operate.
And do you know where division got their information
well,
from?
Well, undoubtedly from police intelligence, I would think. Mm. Yeah. Undoubtedly.
And would you say roughly you searched more Jewish areas than Arab or more Arab than Jewish or rough balance of the two?
Just about balance. I mean, I've never forgotten one ghastly morning when we had to search a place that was a school for young rabbis. We used to get them about 13, 14. And it was a hot, sticky morning. And the sanitary conditions under which these young lads lived were awful. There was, you know, the beds were jammed up against each other. The smell was frightful. And a general chap who subsequently became a judge of the High Court called Angus Stroud, who was my mortar officer, rushed in with his search team and gave them those marvellous orders, stand by your beds. But they couldn't stand by their beds because there was nowhere to stand. Oh dear, oh dear. No wonder they didn't like us. But it was interesting seeing the way some of these characters lived. Interesting.
What sort of reaction did you get from those being collected up and filtered by the police and
they
searched?
They were not happy. But then you see the doc is a marvellous guy. I mean, if they're treated nicely and give them a cup of tea and all the rest of it, and say, all right, you know, this is not forever, you'll be back home, they accepted it. As part of life.
And what about the jocks? I mean, did they...
The jocks didn't like it much, to be honest. They took no pleasure in bullying old men and old women and children and so on. But they did it, and they kept their tempers. We never had an incident, I remember.
Were there attempts to provoke them? Were there attempts to provoke them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, they were called horrid names and things. But no, I never saw them react.
Roughly what sort of numbers of men would you have to turn out to have a...
Well, it depended on the area. I mean, yes. Mostly it was usually companies. Usually companies about 150. If you had a big area. I mean, the best night was in when July 1946, when we put the whole of the Jewish agency... locked them all up, including who became president of Israel.
Golda Meir,
who invited the boys in for a cup of tea. I mean, but that was a very big one because we had two parachute battalions as well. Napier Crookenden's battalion came and worked with mine. And that was right through Palestine. We got fed up with the Jewish agency and we bagged the lot.
Did you ever encounter any resistance, physical or armed resistance, in the course of carrying out a search?
No. I don't remember any. But where we encountered resistance was when we put curfews on the streets of Jerusalem.
Yes.
And they would put a bomb at the crossroads, you know. And that was a sort of resistance. I don't remember, actually, except after the King David affair being actually shot at by anyone in the streets, but bombs, yes.
Do you remember finding anything in particular in the course of search operations?
Yes, occasionally we found sort of cupboards with rifles and ammunition and things in it, yes. Mm. We never found, I mean, the really big ones were the Palmach and Haganah dumps that were usually in the country, and they were in very, very big concealed underground armories. Yeah. But we personally, as a regiment, didn't find one.
You mentioned also you were doing patrols. What sort of patrols were you carrying out?
Well, this again was down the various roads. The tale of the Good Samaritan comes to my mind. I mean, that horrible road down to Beersheba? Beersheba? No.
Jericho, perhaps?
Jericho, yes. That had to be patrolled at night to keep it open, and that was really rather horrid because you were really on your own in beastly country and you did not know what might happen. And you could be shot at, and we were. Yeah.
You were ambushed then on that road?
Yes.
What sort of scale of patrol would you normally employ on that duty?
Well, that would be probably a jeep and a carriers made too much noise, and in any case, the tracks wore. We didn't have armored cars. A jeep and a 1500 weight, you know, sort of 10, 15 men.
So it bears.
And of course, you see, again, the Jews' answer to that was to what I might call the explosive milestone, where you had a dummy milestone with a wire control, and as you went past, up it went.
Did you have any of those in your time there?
Yes, not many.
Did they manage to? Did they inflict any casualties?
Yes, we had three killed in one of them. Yeah.
How did the jocks react to that kind of?
Well, they got very angry. The trouble was, there was no way you would hit back in the dark. But the answer was vigilance and looking out for any form of suspicious sign, and that they got good at.
Was that just a matter of natural instinct being developed?
Yes.
I mean, could you train for that kind of
vigilance? No, because you couldn't. What you could train was to say, now look, here you are, this is the road you're going down, have a good look at the thing. This is a bit of a low flying area, occasionally we have this.
That's
rather like stalking. You can train people to notice odd things. And with good luck, you'll get away with it.
Now, if you've been going down a road like the Jericho Road on the northwest frontier, you would have picketed the heights before you moved, wouldn't you?
But this wasn't the same problem. In the northwest frontier, you were picketing the heights in order to get a column through.
Yes.
This was patrolling the road to make quite certain that evildoers couldn't use it by night to, you know, mine culverts and things. In other words, they didn't know when maybe someone might come down.
How many patrols did you normally put up and down a road during the night then? Because it was simply random patrols
it's
during the night.
Absolutely, totally random. Mm. I honestly couldn't give you a figure there. It rather depended on what sort of information we had from the police as to what gangs might be about. Because remember, there were Arabs as well as Jews. We went just after Jews.
Yes.
So we depended on the police for, you know, they would say, well, look, we know there's a gang operating so-and-so. I think we ought to have extra vigilance down this road.
What about once you'd moved into Jerusalem and you were in the built-up area? Presumably you had a different style of patrolling.
Well, that was very different. Basically speaking, we only patrolled when there was a curfew on, or again, if there was some particular reason, something, you know, before some feast, religious feast, where people might be thinking about.
Did you patrol at the same sort of strength, section patrol, for Jerusalem?
Well, in Jerusalem, of course, they were on foot, didn't they?
Yes.
In the countryside, they were motorized.
Hmm.
Well, some of them were basically motorized.
I mean, was there any attempt at sniping in Jerusalem?
At
sniping while you were in Jerusalem?
I don't remember that. Hmm.
Now, you mentioned religious ceremonies and so forth. In a divided community, there's always the risk of communal strife or widespread disorder, rioting, and disorderly protests. Did you have to deal with those?
Oh, you had the odd people. The trouble about Jerusalem is, and you have a look at any photo of it, there are just nice-sized, handy stones lying around, you know, all over the place. And, I mean, the big thing was small boys with a volley of stones. I mean, it was like the pre-Northern Ireland without the boys in riot gear and so on. And but that wasn't actually... We never really had a very serious one.
What sort of riot drill would you have used if you'd been...
Oh, we had a very good book on riot drill from India, where if you had a major riot, you had a banner which you unfolded and a bugler which sounded in the old time. And we used that, yes.
So you trained for that kind
of... Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
Well, that had been the formation where you had a formation called the Box.
That's it.
To clear the street.
That's it, yes. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And it would have depended upon... selective.
But I mean, your Jerusalem streets are ridiculous, narrow sort of areas. It's quite different.
What sort of accommodation were you in
well,
Jerusalem?
Well, Italian was in two big blocks there, the Syrian orphanage and the Hospice de Notre Dame. Hospice de Notre Dame literally is just outside the Damascus Gate in Jerusalem. Huge big building, was a hospice for pilgrims before the First World War. And that took half the battalion. And the Syrian orphanage was in what they call the Mer Sharim area. And that took the other half of the battalion, plus the mortars and carriers.
Were those buildings safe buildings? Were they safe buildings to be in?
Oh, yes.
Did you have to fortify them to make them
yes,
secure?
The ground windows were sandbagged. One had barbed wire around them. One had sentry posts and the roofs and so on. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Were they ever attacked?
The, odd enough, the hospice, they had a try, but it had quite thick walls and it didn't work.
What did they try to do?
Well, they tried to put a charge on one of the walls. Mm. They were caught and shot at. Yeah.
They were caught?
Shot at and got away. We found blood.
So they paid a price?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Did you manage to actually catch anyone carrying arms or explosive using your curfew?
We missed Menahem Begin by inches after the... I thought the railway station raid or the King David went up. And, in fact, one of our patrols and his lot exchanged shots, but they were too long range away, and I don't think anyone was hit. We knew it was Menahem Begin who was involved.
Did that come down through your police
yes.
connection?
Yes, yes.
And another thing that forces involved in internal security often do is to put up roadblocks to divide territory up. Did you do that as normal?
We did that as part of other operations. There was a famous operation which Bernard Ferguson describes, where a very young man, highly decorated, got our help, and with a bit of very clever planning, we captured an absolute ace terrorist. And this was very much frowned on by the government. And Bernard Ferguson was more or less sacked from the Palestine Police. Roy Farron, you've heard of Roy Farron, haven't you? Well, we were the guys that helped Roy Farron put up the initial ambush, yes.
Why did the government disapprove of this action?
I don't know. I think that... they thought maybe that the counter attacks by the Jews would be so escalated they would find it difficult to deal with them. I don't know. I mean, Bernard was a very great chum of mine. He would never talk about it. He thought the other thing was a disgrace.
Who actually directed you day to day? Did you have a train car going up through brigade to division, or did you get orders
well,
more or less direct
know.
From division?
I mean, I was in contact. Our brigadier was just out of Jerusalem. One was in daily contact with them, and one got one's orders from them. Mm. Where they, well, obviously from division, got their orders from, I wouldn't know, or how. But it was a very happy affair. Mm.
At what point did this sort of political side start to have effect? Presumably not at battalion level or brigade level. Would division have been
well,
sensitive
I would,
to political
I would,
pressure?
Well, when it comes to putting the head of the Jewish agency behind bars, I would have thought that it got right down to battalion level, yes.
But, I mean, presumably the intention to do that would have come down from the commander-in-chief
on
the
spot. Oh, the intention to have done that would have come down from the cabinet.
Yes.
After all, the Jewish agency was a government agency meant to cooperate with the British.
Yes, it was a government in waiting, in effect.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Mm. I mean, before you locked these people up, were you in daily contact with them at your level?
No. We had no contact with the Jewish agency at all. Mm. And the only Jews we had contact with were the Jewish officers of the Palestine Police. Mm. Well, bloody good.
Mm. I was going to ask you about your overall impressions of the Palestine Police and their working relationship with you, what that was like.
Well, when I was there, they were first class. Mm. But then, you see, they started forming... You had this funny business of the call-up. They didn't want necessarily young men in the army. So they started a scheme by which if you volunteered to the Palestine Police, you got X months off your...
Military service.
And the guys they got in there were nothing like as well-trained as the original ones. And then they started forming what you might call police battalions, who wore the uniform of these, but were rarely used as cordon search boys. They weren't policemen in the same way. And I don't think they were as good.
It sounds as though what they were doing was trying to turn it into a sort of gendarmerie.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they wouldn't really be either policemen or soldiers.
That's
one,
it.
Or one or the other.
You're quite right. But they were in the uniform of policemen. Mm.
How much did you get to know about the various enemy forces on both sides, the Jewish forces and the Arab forces, who you were trying to contain?
To be honest, comparatively little. I mean, one knew about... The police didn't like talking about them much. You had Stern Gang, who were political murderers.
Yes.
IZL, who were the tough eggs. Mm. You then had the two interesting organizations, the Palmach, who were the boys of Haganah, who were under permanently armed. And their job really was to defend settlements. Mm. And then you had the Haganah, which I don't think the police knew all that much about. It was a very big organisation and a very, very efficient one.
Would you regard the Haganah as being a political organisation as well as a military one?
Well, it was military, but with political direction. Well, it should be. But we never... I mean, when you come to think of it, that we trained the Haganah, people like Barla Breedin and the night squads under Wingate trained the Jewish regular army. Mm. So in those days, we knew quite a lot about it.
And presumably, since they'd received British training, it would have been reasonable to be able to anticipate what they were likely to do.
Well, except one thing, except you see that come about 1940, when they had sufficient forces in Palestine to stop it, the threat to the pipeline, which was what the Night Squads were all about, dealing with the blowing up of the oil pipeline to Haifa, had gone, and therefore an awful lot of cooperation had ceased on political level between ourselves and Jewish aid. It started up again with, of course, the business of the refugees.
Yes, you mentioned the refugees. You said that you found it rather distasteful to round up
business,
refugees.
That business of stopping people getting off these capped-out ships was awful.
How did the jocks feel about that?
They hated it. They hated it. You see, we very nearly, you have to go back. There was this court libel case, Tolstoy, which you know about.
Against Lord Aldington.
That's it.
Actually, it was Lord Aldington against Count Tolstoy.
Yes, that's
in legal terms.
Well, our 8th Battalion was one of the units in Austria detailed to put these wretched Jews on the train. And they refused orders. Mm.
This is when they sent the Crimean Tartars and Cossacks back to the Russians.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, there was a certain step beyond which you cannot ask sort of British soldiers to go, and then they reckon beyond it. Mm. Wrong. There we are. And when you say, they explained to them, you said, look, terribly sorry, we can't let these illegal immigrants come in. We've got to stop them. But when you saw the conditions of they arrived in, the ships they arrived in, what were we doing? I think there's a limit to which discipline can be stretched.
Did you suffer any breakdown of discipline as a result of these strains?
None. When they only got it from the senior NCOs saying, please, we don't want to go out another one of these,
What could you say to them in return?
Well, you would say, sorry, chums, that is what you're paid to do.
Did you find that because of this, that they were more sympathetic to the Zionist side?
I think they were more sympathetic to the Jews until the Jews blew up the King David. I think that was a turning point.
What happened after that? Did that swing
It merely meant that the Jews had lost all sympathy for their cause. It did no good.
It sounds as though you think it was a political blunder on the part of the.
It was.
The.
I think it was. I think it was. I don't think it did their cause any good at all.
Did you have any sort of orbat then at battalion headquarters for the Jewish organisations with personalities nominated?
We didn't know much about it.
Who did that? Did you have an intelligence officer who was responsible
through our intelligence corps channels, yes. But it was pretty vague. We had no idea, really, who was commanding who in Jerusalem.
What about on the Arab side? Because there's a substantial Arab.
I think we had much more about the Arabs, because there were many more Arabs in the Palestine police who had much more contact with people.
You mentioned this man, Saeed Bey Idrisi.
Yes.
What sort of things did you learn from him? Because you said he came and addressed.
He was exactly what you would expect of a very, very highly efficient colonial policeman. He had the thing absolutely under his thumb. He had the most beautiful telephone on his desk I've ever seen. It was a sort of on a lovely square box with the Imperial German arms on it, made, I think, for the Kaiser's visit pre-1914. And you know, they were single.